Blog Talk Radio.
Funky Writers Show is now in the air. There is a blizzard outside, but it's nice and warm and toasty on the Funky Writers Show, spotlighted on badredheadmedia.com as a top author podcast on the web today and called a total blast of a show for writers. My name is Robert Batista, and you may ask, why is the Funky Writers Show so terrific? Because I'm a writer just like my guests and know that words are the breath of life. Connect with the show on the exciting Twitter page by going to @TheFunkyWriter. This story is about what happens when our children don't turn out as expected. Just because they don't present as we want them to, does it really mean something is wrong? It takes a lot of strength to let go of expecting our children to live the life we envision. As parents, it's hard, painful, to let them be free to forge their own path. But bumps in the road, doing things harder than they need to be, isn't always a bad thing. In the case of my protagonists, they eventually figure it out on their own and in their own way. These are the sage words of our guest today, author Sue Duff. Welcome, Sue Duff, to the Funky Writers Show.
Thank you, Robert. It's wonderful to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. Sue, so great having you on the Funky Writers Show. Legend has it that you had a skiing accident that messed up your knee, had surgery, and was laid up during one summer. So, to combat the boredom, you started writing on a word processor. So my first question is, Sue, how did you start? What exactly was the first thing you typed on that writing machine?
Well, it was funny because the first thing I did was just kind of sit down and stare at my computer for a while and thought, What do I feel strong enough about to just kind of start doing some writing? And it really was just to combat the boredom. And to be honest, it was also a way of me avoiding killing my teenage son at the time. I knew I needed to distract myself. But I just kind of was in search of some kind of superhero that had nothing to do with all the typical, you know, norms, you know, the all-powerful and everything else, and what happens when we're supposed to be born, you know, super and powerful, and it doesn't happen. And, you know, the disappointment that you're surrounded with and the, you know, lack of, you know, respect and just this whole sense of being born a failure in everybody's lives and eyes, and how does that really affect you? And I'm sure a lot of it did come from my son at the time. You know, he wasn't acting the way I thought he should. As most people, how could I kind of step back and look at it from his point of view and understand that he needed to, you know, take his own path and not do what I felt he had to do? And that's kind of where those words came from that you quoted me on earlier.
Understood. It said that you were inspired to write by a radio host who was writing a series of YA novels and shared it on the air. Now, was this inspiration immediate, Sue, or did it fester for a while before you made the decision to try your hand at it?
Well, I think at that point it was just, I was intrigued that somebody who had no background whatsoever, education or anything, had just kind of stumbled into writing. And he really did share a lot of his experience at the time. And I think the thing that affected me the most was how just really jazzed up about it he was, and how it just was so energizing to listen to him and how he discovered this passion about himself. And I think those words and just the emotion and everything that I got, you know, listening to him every morning on my way to work, just kind of started to hit home with me about how I felt about things and wanting to write it down. And I was kind of a closet writer, but mainly only at that time when some really prophetic, you know, things would actually happen to me. And it was like, wow, I might even enjoy doing this just because. But it, you know, I think it was always one of those things, like many people who kind of eventually get into writing, it's you have all these naysaying things that you give yourself, like, I don't have enough time, I'm raising a family, when I can get around to it, that would be nice. And it truly took me being laid up for a summer to start to realize that, well, you don't have any excuses, you've got the time, you're not going anywhere because you can't. So I just kind of started to sit down and eventually something, a thought inspired me enough that I started typing.
It's amazing how things like that work out. So your first book, Fade to Black, Book One, The Weir Chronicles, delves into the hidden world of the Weir, a magical race that prevents the Earth from self-destructing. Wow, fascinating stuff. Now, I think you mentioned something about possibly your son, but where did the seeds for this compelling tale germinate from? Where did you find this story?
Well, I think it originally just started with what happens, you know, when you're supposed to be born with all these, you know, these powers and being able to accomplish so much. And my protagonist, Ian Black, wasn't. He was the last of their race. This magical race of being, you know, is used to kind of living in the background and the shadows of this changing, developing world for thousands of years. And they didn't really care all that much at the beginning about who was on the planet as much as the energies below the planet and keeping all of that in harmony between the surface and what lies beneath. But as their race came into the 20th century, they started to recognize that they were dying out. And with it, little by little, the storms, the tidal waves, all, you know, hurricanes, all of that, and blizzards were all, you know, starting to increase in intensity and frequency. And it was as their race was dying out, so too was, you know, Mother Earth starting to kind of react to that. So they ended up turning to prophecies that had been in place for hundreds of years that there would eventually be one last powerful Weir born to their race, and he would be the savior of the Earth and, you know, be able to be recognized on his chest. Well, Ian was that baby that was born with that mark, but he didn't develop the powers as the prophecy had expected. So how his life turned out, and yet how can I be what I'm supposed to be if I'm not given the tools to do that? And that is pretty much how everything just slowly evolved with my story and became just so intense for me in terms of how he's so affected and kind of wounded without it being his fault, and trying to find his own niche in the world, and how can he make a difference when he falls so short of what he was supposed to be.
Sue, your Weir Chronicles series combines both fantasy and science fiction. Now, there are a lot of readers who don't read any of those genres and may not know the difference between the two. Can you explain to our audience what the major differences are between those two genres? And was the fusing of these genres pretty seamless for you to do?
I've always been a big fan of both. In fact, that's pretty much what I cut my teeth on as a young adult was, you know, fantasy where it's a lot of make-believe in the world.
Right.
And there's different subgenres of that, like paranormal and other things. But it's pretty much just this whole sense of what we can't explain. And for me, I think it was easier to combine science fiction, which is, you know, what science base there may be, to something incredible. But again, because we don't understand the science, or it's not in our realm of current, you know, abilities, then it's considered science fiction. And for me, they're kind of one and the same. In fact, one of my favorite lines from my first book is, magic will always be in the world as long as we believe in what we can't explain. And
right.
In a way, that's kind of what science fiction is as well. It's what could be in our dreams and in what our creative, you know, aspects are as scientists and engineers and everything else. But it's not possible yet. But it's not to say that if we just wait time out, you know, it will be in the future. I mean, a good example of that is, you know, the original Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry and
right.
all of those amazing things that he envisioned, you know, and all, and a lot of it has already come true, and it's only a few decades later. I think it's just time, you know, anything is possible given time, and that the only difference, and another line in my first book is the difference between magic and science is time, that what we can't explain may seem magical to us, but eventually we may be able to explain it. But I hope there's always magic in the world and all, because that helps us to become, you know, in visionaries and creative and, you know, trying to achieve and not understand, but just have basic belief about us.
Magic and imagination. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Let there always be the two. Sue, regarding fantasy and science fiction, do you tend to lean more towards one genre over the other? And if so, tell us why.
You know, it's funny because in every one of the novels in this Weird Chronicles series, I kind of start out with the fantasy element being primary, but it eventually kind of progresses and transforms into more of that science and science fiction. The Weird people, because they are dying out, they fear not only for their own race and perpetuating that, but also for the Earth and how they're dying and extinction is affecting the planet. When Ian was born with the mark of the prophecy but not the powers, they actually turned to modern-day science to try to perpetuate their own race. And as we all know, it's not a good idea to fool with Mother Nature. So that's kind of the basis as the series progresses, how they kind of, for, you know, all their efforts through the centuries of protecting Earth, they actually start to seriously affect it in the sense of trying to, you know, help themselves to continue as a race. So I really mold the two. It's hard for me to separate them,
right.
especially with the basis of how the novels and the story plot really does go, that they kind of dabble in science, and yet they don't know everything about what causes them to be that magical. And by tinkering with it, they actually mess up with what they try to avoid.
So you've written your first novel and are ready to have it published. Tell us who published it and what were the challenges, if any, in getting the story out to the world.
I think there's no way to get published any longer without a lot of major challenges. Whether or not you go the traditional route and you send out hundreds of queries and hope that a publisher, you know, will think that your type of book, your genre, everything else is the hottest thing now, and that they can really market you and that there'd be a big enough audience to make it worthwhile. I mean, that kind of tradition of publishing continues. It still does. There's lots of that going on. I think what's changed about publishing is there are so many choices now that there weren't, you know, even a decade or two ago. And self-publishing in this digital age and everything has become so easy, and that really was the way that I chose to go. I queried a little bit, but I probably sent out less than, you know, 11 or 12 query letters or submissions and stuff, because I just wanted to know what was out there and how to write those, because it was kind of what was purported at the time to kind of push for. But the more I learned about self-publishing, it just felt like it was much more comfortable for me. So I never really seriously tried to go the traditional route. I also made quite a few friends over those first few years that I was trying to be the best writer and learn to be a better writer for myself. And a lot of even traditionally published, very successful authors were either getting dropped by their publishing houses or being expected to write a certain way, and that's not where they were growing as authors. And so they would have still their own contracts with their publishing houses, but they themselves were starting to look into trying to do self-publishing. So it's a lot of work. I mean, I'm not going to candy coat it at all. It's a lot of work to self-publish a novel, especially one with quality. But that was the choice that I chose to take. So, yeah, all of my novels at this point are self-published.
Sue, your War Chronicles series has an underlying message about conservation. Besides the obvious, what other reasons did you choose to do this? Is saving the planet something that you are passionate about?
I have a lot of passions. So I think this is just something that I think it's important that we just keep in mind that we do have effect over our own planet. And I know a lot of people that are out there, they're friends of mine that are very passionate and fanatic about, you know, conservation and stuff. I can't really count myself in there. I don't always recycle well, you know, that kind of thing. And it's one of those things where I do what I can and when I'm thinking of it. But I think more than anything, it has to do with just the love of nature. We always went camping a lot when I was a young child, and I was in Girl Scouts for years, and so the outdoors and animals and things like that was just a love that I had. I love animals. I love growing plants and flowers, and it's just incredible what a sunset can do to me, you know, and just make me hold my breath. And the shrinking planet that we have, with being able to see and do research and just the amazing things across our world, to me is what's more important. How we can help to preserve as much of that as we can is anybody's, you know, goals that they can set for themselves. I think if anything, I just want and hope that people truly appreciate this beautiful planet that we have and do their part to try to protect it.
So how do you balance this message of conservation with good storytelling?
Yeah, that's always the challenge, because I never, ever want to come across as being preachy. And as much, and again, as much as I said, I love the planet. I love the idea of conservation. I think it is everybody's duty to do that in their own way. I'm not a fanatic, and I'm not one to get up on the soapbox for a whole lot of reasons, but I'm kind of more of a quiet person that just tends to do what I can and hope that, as a good example, others will kind of take that on. But I think because the Weir are so focused on the planet, and they
right.
have had this philosophy about caring for the Earth and recognizing how the energies of the world are in harmony and need to stay that way, I think my preachiness has come more of the world building that I've created, and how, you know, the good guys supposedly in this story are all on the right side in terms of trying to take that into consideration and keeping it there at the forefront of the stories. But it's certainly not what the stories themselves are about. I think the stories are, you know, the characters and what happens to us, trying to find our own niche in the world and stuff like that. And the conservation, the lore of the Weir is more of in the background. So it's just kind of subtly there the whole time.
Let's talk about Sue Duff, the person. You were born in Chicago, but grew up in Phoenix. Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum. Why don't you tell us about the early transition from one to the other? Was it seamless for you?
Well, it was. I was only four and a half when we moved to Phoenix, and it was really because a sibling's health was so poor that
right.
the drier climate down there, and so that's why my parents kind of, and there was five of us at the time, and the sixth one, I have five sisters, and number six was born within a year or so after we were down there in Phoenix. But, you know, I love the desert. I truly do. It has its own kind of beauty and simplicity.
Right.
And starkness, you know, there's an incredible way of how nature can prevail no matter what the climate and environments. And I grew up appreciating the desert, but, you know, my undergraduate, degree and stuff was in Flagstaff, Arizona, which is in a huge pine forest and mountains, and they do get snow occasionally, and enough at least to do a little bit of skiing there. But when I had a chance, I came up to Denver for graduate school, and I just fell in love with Colorado. It was
the most
amazing state, and ended up staying here after that. So I never quite go home, but it's still home down there, and I go home often enough down there that it still feels like home. But I do love Colorado.
What books and authors inspired you in your youth, and what writers do you read for pleasure today?
My pleasure is all over the place, but when I was younger, probably my earliest experience with truly getting into a series of novels was Nancy Drew and the
right.
Hardy Boys and all of that, and that's where my whole love of mysteries came from. And then when I was a little bit older, and it was an easier choice for me to, you know, gravitate towards something, it was the fantasy and the science fiction worlds.
Right.
Ursula K. Le Guin and Dragon Riders of Pern were one of the most inspiring, and just loved those book series of hers. And then, of course, Frank Herbert and Dune and his Dune series. And, you know, I just got into both that fantasy and science fiction probably in my early teens. After that, I was a huge mystery fan. I read a little, you know, about science fiction and fantasies, but I started getting into a whole lot of mysteries as I in my earlier years, and I think it was because they were quicker and easier reads for me, and
right.
And all. But you know, Michael Crichton and everything else, I never quite got away from all that science fiction and a lot of the fantasy either. But one of the more recent ones that I still go back and read occasionally is, you know, the Dresden Files and Jim Butcher and all. I just loved his series. And that's partly also why my main protagonist, Ian, you know, when he can't live among the weir, he just feels too much like a failure, he tried to create what he couldn't do naturally, and he became a magician, and that, I think, was inspired by Jim Butcher's series, too.
Interesting. Sue, some authors can pull out a pen or laptop and write anywhere at any time, but others need a special time and place to be creative. Which one are you?
I've got my favorite place. I'm the most productive when I'm at home and it's quiet. My dog is at daycare because she's a Great Dane and she tries to crawl into my lap every time I sit down at my computer. But yeah, my desk and my computer and probably my sweats and slippers and a sweatshirt. Now, that's my whole favorite little ambiance here. And I do better. A lot of people are inspired, I think, by playing music in the background.
Right.
I'm one of those people who need to be completely quiet. It just feels like I can immerse myself in my worlds a lot easier when I can do just thoroughly imagine everything, including, you know, just the sounds and the smells and whatnot. But, yeah, I have no trouble being creative as long as it's a quiet environment.
Let's talk about the other two books in your Weir Chronicles series, Mass and Mirrors and Sleight of Hand. Where do both of these stories take your protagonist, Ian Black, and how do you get each book in the series to stand on its own merit?
Well, I think that's the hardest part for me about the book standing alone, because they really are meant to be this huge overarching plot of a series. And so one book truly does build upon the other. I'm also not a big proponent of books repeating themselves over and over again to fill in readers. One of the things that reviewers have said, though, about my books is that I don't do a lot of that. I don't, you know, just bore, you know, readers who have picked up the next book with all the details for the first several chapters of what
right.
they already know. But I do have a lot of the background woven into the stories. And so whether or not you did pick up the first book or the second book, I think you can get at least enough of the story to get into it and appreciate it as a standalone book. But to be honest, at least from the author point of view, there's so much that you missed if you don't pick up those first couple of books and truly read. And I'm also big for a lot of like huge like OMG kind of moments of, oh my gosh, I never saw that coming. And you're certainly going to miss a lot of that if you don't read the first two. But yeah, Fade to Black and Masks and Mirrors and Sleight of Hand, they're all of the titles especially are based on magicians and illusionist terminology.
Right.
And
right.
And they're very closely, what occurs in the books is very closely associated to the title. So Fade to Black is, you get to learn all about the main protagonist, Ian Black. You know, everything fades into him and what he's about and where he comes from. But I do have a core set of characters that are primary characters. Ian doesn't stand alone or primarily up at the top. There's quite, you know, there's a handful of characters that are very strong, and I do write from their different points of view, not just a single point of view. And so it's fun because there's a lot going on, and not all the characters know what's going on, but some of them do. And so the first one, like I said, primarily focuses on Ian, but then there's a kind of background character that occurs in the first book, and the second book really focuses on what he's about and his background and how he is a main character that you probably didn't realize in the first book. And then in the third one, Sleight of Hand, it really all comes together. With it being a five-book series, the third one is kind of that point of everything changes, and all the things that have led up to these characters coming together happens in the third book. But then there's such a huge shift that occurs in the third book for everybody that hopefully you didn't see coming, and kind of just puts everybody in a direction of having to work together that, you know, all of that first part all led up to.
Sue, you also have a blog on your website called A Cook's Guide to Writing. What is the genesis of this blog? Where did this inspiration come from?
Well, again, I kind of have a way of combining things that I love, like the fantasy and the science fiction elements. And I'm a huge cook. I love to cook.
Oh, really?
And yes, I do. I really am. And it's funny because the more I learned how to write, it just started kind of clicking with me that I could, you know, just kind of identify with it, with, you know, how I learned to cook. And, you know, we all start out, you know, as cooks, not sure what we're doing in the kitchen. And that was very much me when I, and that was very much me when I was first learning to write. You know, and here we throw something together and we think, oh, we've just created the best thing in the world. And it ends up being, you know, something you can't even, you know, palate and stand to put in your mouth. And I think everybody, all writers can identify with that, with some of their first works. You know, they think, oh, I just wrote, you know, the next great American novel. And then you read it, you know, later on and it's like, oh, my gosh, what was I thinking? And, but so, yeah, the more I learned how to be a writer and a better writer was so, you know, simple to equate that to how I learned to cook. So, yeah, I just love the blog. It was just, you know, not to meant to be anything prophetic, just, you know what, you know, writing isn't that much different than cooking. You know, we all have to add seasonings to our pot. You know, you can put your basics of characters and setting and actions and everything else into your pot, but if you don't season it with colorful characters and exotic locations or really, you know, dire drama and plots, then it's going to be kind of bland and nobody's going to enjoy it that much, and they're going to put it down or just know they don't want to be invited back to your house for dinner again. And so I just started to equate that, and it just was something that was fun to write, and it ended up being a whole lot of fun to read by other people, especially would-be writers. So putting it in simplistic terms helped me, but I think it has the potential of helping others that are especially just starting out.
I love the cooking writing analogy. Boy, did I love that. So, Sue, let's talk social media. I see that you're on many, many social media, such as Goodreads, Twitter, and Facebook. Of the social media platforms, which one do you feel is the most beneficial for your brand, and which, in your estimation, is the best for authors? Or does each platform offer its own compensations?
Oh, I think the latter of what you just said is probably truer. I don't tend to write just like young adult or YA or middle grade kind of books. my books, I think, have a complicated enough world and plots often that as much as I have young fans, I'm kind of so all over the place. The youngest fan that has connected with me was 12 years old, and it goes all the way up to, you know, well into their 60s and 70s. So I think such a wide range of individuals like my books that I think you have to be all over social media, because certain age groups probably gravitate towards Facebook. At least that's the way it feels like. Others, you know, are more tweeters, and others are more Instagram and Pinterest and things like that. So because I'm so wide-ranged in all, I feel like it was important for me to be all over the place, which, as you probably know too, Robert, it's really hard to stay on top of all of that. You know, as a writer, it's
right.
Like, where do you find the time to do it all? And I'm still learning, you know, easier, better ways of tweeting and posting to Facebook and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, it's one of those things that when you're a writer, especially with, you know, self-publishing, but even with traditional publishing, I've heard this too, you know, you just have to focus on the fact that once you are a published author, it's a business for you. It's not just pleasurable anymore. And so I always have to force myself to set aside time where I get my writing time in, my social media time in, and my self-publishing time in, and somehow I have to have a life on top of that.
Not necessarily in that order, right?
Oh, yeah. Why, sometimes it is in that order.
What's next for Sue Duff? What other irons do you have in the fire?
Well, you know, in this kind of passionate thing that I took on a few years ago, and it's turned into something so huge for me, I've met some, you know, just amazing fellow writers here in Colorado. And there was a small group of female speculative fiction writers, you know, the fantasy, the paranormal, the science fiction kind of writers group. And we kind of all just, you know, eventually formed a really close friendship. So we had a spontaneous little writers retreat that we decided to do last spring up in, you know, the mountains of Colorado. And we got inspired being together and really energizing each other, and decided to form a publishing company, Wicked Ink Books. And once a year, at least, maybe twice a year, depending on if we catch on to some momentum, we're publishing an anthology of short stories by each one of us on a common theme. And our first one, TikTok, Seven Tales of Time, is about to hit the market here real soon. And we're so proud of it. We are all very accomplished, you know, recognized writers, and what we've put together on our own, and then also, you know, what we've collaborated on, we're really proud of, and I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it. So that's on Amazon right now for pre-sale, and the digital copy will be available March 1st, and book copies and on other, you know, digital sites will be available March 28th. So definitely look out for that too. We're very, very proud of our first endeavor.
TikTok, Seven Tales of Time.
Yes,
that's a winning title if there ever was one. So, Sue, give out your contact information. How can people follow you? I know you have a fantastic website. Give out any contact information you'd like.
Well, the website is www.sueduff.com, and that always has a lot of information for me about, you know, about my books and short stories that I've written anyway, and flash fiction, and just, you know, upcoming appearances and things like that. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Sue Duff 55, and my Facebook site is Sue Duff Dash Writer, and then my Instagram is Sue Duff Author. So definitely follow me, connect with me. I'd love to hear from anyone out there, especially what they feel about my book, good and bad, and I hope that everybody keeps me in mind the next time they go to a bookstore or get on Amazon.
This has been the Funky Writer Show with me, Robert Batista. I'm at author R. Batista on Twitter. Look for my free short stories, Carmela's Dream and My Baby Has No Name, on smashwords.com. My guest has been fantasy author and so much more, Sue Duff. Make sure you visit her fantastic website, SueDuff.com, and feast your soul. Thank you so much, Sue, for being a guest on the Funky Writer Show.
Thank you.
It's been great. Bye now.
Thank you so much, Robert.